Al primero de mayo.
Hello and welcome to the Pick and Pop Podcast. I am your host, Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD, that's TheSamD. Use the hashtag Pick and Pop to follow along with the show when it's posted. SoundCloud.com/ShieldFreeSports is where you can find the show posted up on SoundCloud. iTunes, subscribe and rate. Search Pick and Pop Podcast. That's Pick and Pop. Pick and Pop Podcast. No and. The letter N. Pick and Pop Podcast. Do the same thing for Google Play and Stitcher Radio. So, it is Saturday. Supposed to get a pod on Friday. I did a pod Friday. Then I remembered, let me take a look ahead at Friday night's games. And there were too many good games to do a pod. So I scrapped that pod, and we're doing a pod the day after. And thankfully, did I do that. Because LeBron went nuts last night. LeBron went nuts in Chocolate City last night. You know, he had dudes like Stephen A. clamoring for him to get buckets, for them to get a win, for him to do everything possible to get a dub, because he lost four in a row and he looked ugly doing it, and LeBron looked clueless in the post games of trying to answer, why are they losing? Why are they so trash on D? So what did LeBron go out there and do? Oh yeah, plus we got the whole shorty, the 18-year-old who said LeBron was all up in the DMs, which really didn't look like he was. I mean, yes, his account was in the DMs. We don't know if it was LeBron or not. Not like he was trying to smash. He just said, what's up? Well, 18-year-old won her 15 minutes of fame, blew that up, put more pressure on LeBron. So now we got the DMs. You know Savannah's not having that. So now we got the DMs going on. We got Savannah in Bron's ear. We got media clowns like Stephen A. calling them out. What are you going to do? Your team sucks right now. You can't play defense. You're losing to the Knicks. You're losing to the Nets. You lost four in a row. You're not looking like a team. If the playoffs started today, you would not be in the playoffs. What are you going to do? You know what the King did? You know what the best basketball player in the world did? He went out there and put up 57 points. 57, dog. 5-7. 23 of 34. 23 of 34. 9 for 9 from free throws. 2 for 4 from 3. 11 rebounds. 7 assists. 3 steals. 2 blocks. Only 3 turnovers. And the Cavs needed every single bucket to beat Washington. They needed every single one. They needed every single of those 57 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 9 for 9 from free throw, 2 for 4 from 3, 23 of 34 from the field. They needed every single one of those statistics to get past the Wizards at home. The Wizards were at home. But let's talk about this 57, because it was an impressive 57. Now, there can be lackluster great performances. You can just get hot and you can't miss. And, you know, you can go off and just like how Klay dropped 60. He just couldn't miss. No matter what he was throwing up, it was going in. This was different. This Bron 57 was different. Number one, it was a big game. And yes, you can tell me it was the 9th game of the season for Cleveland. It was a big game. When you got 18-year-olds blowing you up about your DMs, you got your wife showing up to the game to press you about the 18-year-old blowing you up about your DMs, and then you got media clowns calling you out, it's a big game. 57 of them things. 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. And it was dominance. It was you can call it bully ball. But to me, it was just seeing, and again, I know with Bron, he wears 23 because of Jordan. He has the playmaking passing ability like magic. But I will always say, LeBron James to me is if Karl Malone had handle. And last night was Karl Malone with handle because he played bully ball. He took anybody in the post. Gortat, you can get it. John Wall, you know you can get it. And we'll talk about his comments in a minute. It didn't matter who it was. Bron was taking them in the paint, ISOing them to death. It was amazing to see. I hadn't seen a Bron performance like that since Game 7 2 years ago. Or actually Games 5 through 7 2 years ago. Y'all remember that, right? When the Dubs blew a 3-1 lead. You remember that, right? Yeah, I know I do. But that was bully ball. That was Bron taking them in the paint and punishing them. And that's what Karl Malone used to do. But Karl Malone couldn't really dribble. So he would have to wait for that pick and roll or pick and pop. And he would have to get that jump shot or just drive straight to the rim. But LeBron could take the ball coast to coast, three-quarter court, top of the key. It don't matter. He can bully you from any spot on the court. And he's too big and too strong. Dudes, get out the way. That's what Malone used to do. And I know everything is on YouTube. Go back and look at Karl Malone and that size and that build. That's Bron. Bron lost some weight. He's a bit leaner. But in essence, he's 6'6". Well, he's probably like 6'7". And he's 270 pounds, chiseled. That was Karl Malone. Malone might have an inch or two on Bron, but same deal. 260, 270, chiseled. And when he came running down the lane, nobody got in the way. Absolutely no one. And LeBron's the same way. He's coming down with handles. He's coming down with an outside Jimmy. 2-for-4 from three, like I mentioned. And he's pulling up, and he had all the comments in the world. And he had it working in Chocolate City. He had it working. They had no answer for him. Not that you normally would on any other night, but damn sure last night they had no answer. 57 of them things. And it was an easy 57. I mean, he was shooting fallaways. And in the fourth quarter, it wasn't bully ball. Second and third quarter, it was bully ball. Take him in the paint, punish him. Then he got tired again and worked. So then he pulled him on the outside. And that's the versatility that you look for from the best player in the game. I don't know how you can watch LeBron drop 57 and not think he's the best player in the game. KD is KD. KD is right there. He's close. But KD can't play bully ball like that. Too frail. But LeBron could bang you down low and take you outside and shoot the lights out. When he gets going, how in that mid-range and that 18-19 footer off the one leg like Dirk is falling, ain't nothing you can do about that. Because you've seen Winhurst talk about how he can pretty much tell when LeBron's going to make his shot based off how he lands. When he's balancing his land and his legs are clearly underneath him and he lands on both feet, it's probably going in. But he had everything. He had the fake Dirk off one leg going last night. When that happens, it's lights out. So we talked about the impact of the game. And the fact of the matter is that both teams needed this win. Washington hasn't looked that impressive. And we know Cleveland struggles. Even with this win, they're still only 4-5. And again, I know it's, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks into the season. Playoffs started today. Cavs will not be in the playoffs. Right. So they needed this win. And to hype the stuff up, hype things up, build up the PR. It was on ESPN, so nationally televised game. You got your man's John Wall. And while I'm a big fan of John Wall likes to talk a lot. John Wall out here talking about the Cavs were ducking the Wizards last year. Eastern Conference playoffs, they were ducking the Wizards last year. You know, the fact that the Cavs went and were secure in settling for the 2 seed instead of fighting and going all the way to the last game to push for the 1 seed against Boston, John Wall is saying, yeah, they didn't want to see us. Even Bradley Beal backed him up. He said that even after the series was over with Boston, that the Cavs didn't want to see them in the second round. And Cavs were facing Toronto, whereas the Celtics had to go through Washington, and they did. So again, John Wall out here making these comments, and then they take L's like that. You let Bron kill y'all for 57. Now, John Wall, what did John Wall do? Now, again, this is against a bad defensive team. The Cavs are a bad defensive team. They got Derrick Rose, who's never been a defensive player. You know, their team defense has been shredded entirely. They got JR out. JR might be there outside of Bron, obviously. And Jay Crowder. J.R. Smith's probably the third best, their best guard defender. It's not Dwayne Wade anymore. It might be J.R. Because Wing and Crowder are guarding mostly wings and bigs. You can put Crowder on a switch on a guard, but you don't want him there. You want him on the wing. So to guard a point guard, your best defensive matchup might be J.R. Smith. And what did John Wall do last night? 4 for 13. 4 for 13. 0 for 3 from 3. He's trash from the free throw line. 5 for 12. He bricked a lot of those too. 6 boards. 15 assists. But John Wall was not John Wall last night. And I don't know if he got caught stargazing, but something was off. Only 13 shots. I mean, that's only 3 more than Otto Porter. You're not going to win games like that. Kelly Oubre had more shots than John Wall. Now, Bradley Beal got hot. Even though he was shot trash from 3, only 1 for 5. He got to the line 13 times, 12 for 19 from the floor, 36 points. So 4-13, 0-3, 5-12. Yeah, 15 dimes, 6 boards. But you're out here, again, taunting the King. So again, the King had to deal with an 18-year-old talking about sliding up in the DMs. Savannah coming to the game to check him about said DMs. Media clowns calling him out. And John Wall and Bradley Beal. At least Beal backed it up. But you got John Wall out here saying, yeah, they ducked us last year in the playoffs. 13 points. 4-13. 5 of 12 from the free throw line. I don't want to hear anything more from John Wall. Great player. Almost elite. Almost. Gets paid like an elite. Not really elite. I don't want to hear no more about John Wall. Not be on that level. You can't talk to King to go out here and throw up 4 of 13, 5 of 12 for free throw line and you're a point guard. Don't want to hear it. 15 assists, be damned. I don't want to hear it. Go out there and be gang sign John Wall. If any night was the night that we wanted to see gang sign John Wall, it was last night. Maybe that could have thwarted the 57 from Bron. But instead, we got pedestrian. We got Skip Bayless John Wall. We got a Colin Cowherd John Wall. The dudes who always tear him down. This was an example of what they always like shill about. But then we have other games where he goes off and he's gang sign John Wall. And he's talking shit. We didn't get that last night. We needed that on a prime stage. We needed that against Bron dropping that 57. We needed gang sign John Wall. And we didn't get that. So now another big stage, another big moment. After talking the big one before the game, you go out there and put up 4-13, 5-12 on the free throw line. No more John Wall talk. We're getting closer to where we can like really start to look at these stats and look at the standings and figure out who is good and who's not and who's struggling. But I want you to take a look at some numbers here. I was doing some show prep, stuff like that. But there's some amazing numbers if you just look at basketballreference.com. And if you took a look at the stuff that they have here put up. Team per game stats. I'm going to throw out a couple of like names, like some stats out there. And then we're going to fit who fits and who doesn't fit. This is the game we're going to play today. So let's see here. Let's get this by order. Okay. Let's go top 5 scoring teams in the league. The top 5 scoring teams in the league. Points per game. Highest points per game by team in the league. Now this is again roughly... Only 2 teams have played 10 games. That's Houston and Dallas. But this is roughly after playing 8-9 games. Top 5 teams? You can guess the number one, right? Dubs. Dubs the number one. 120 points a game. 120. Want to guess who's number 2? I don't hear you. You want to guess who's number 2? We got this saying. Who, Houston? Nah. Houston's not even top 10. Right. Who else? I'm going to tell you, Boston? Boston's putting up points. No, Boston is bottom half of the league, 23rd in points per game. Brooklyn Nets, dog. Brooklyn Nets are 2nd in the league in points per game. 114 points per game. I can't explain it either. I cannot explain it either. 114 points per game for Brooklyn. And again, you know, the Nets are still the Nets. They're 3-6. But 114 points per game. Want to guess who's third? Wizards. 113. Here's the two funny ones. Orlando and Indiana, 4-5. Both tied for 111 points per game. So now, how are these teams doing this? How is Orlando, who, again, Orlando will be the 2 seed right now, playoff started. Orlando will be a 2 seed, 6-3. Tied with Detroit. So again, you can't really take a lot of this stuff too seriously early in the beginning when I can tell you right now the Magic and the Pistons are the 2 and 3 seed. Celtics 1, Raptors 4. Those are the top four teams standing-wise in the Eastern Conference. Can't take that too seriously. But, like, when you crunch these numbers and you look at it, they're all doing the same thing. They're all jacking up 25-plus threes a game. They're hitting them at about a 35% clip and higher. Especially the Magic. The Magic is shooting at 42% from three. That's amazing. That's higher than the Dubs. That explains a lot. They're all shooting roughly 50% or higher from the two-point range. They're hitting the glass. They're getting a lot of blocks. The Dubs got 9 blocks a game. That's KD right there. That's Slim Reaper. And JaVale McGee. But you look at these numbers, the things are to jump out at you. Do you know how many threes the Rockets average in the game? Remember I talked about, I think, two pods ago how Houston's way to try to beat the Dubs is to outshoot the Dubs, outdub the Dubs. So the Dubs are averaging 33 threes a game, 32.8. We round up on the Pick Up Hot Podcast. It's 33 3-point attempts a game. Houston, 45 threes a game. The problem is they're only making 14 of them. That's amazing. You take 45 threes and you only make it 14 of them. So that's 31.7. We round up 32% from three. Comparison to the Dubs only shoot 33, but they make 13, 41%. More efficient. So that's going to be the problem with the Rockets. They're trying to get more threes up to keep up with the Dubs. But if you're missing them at that bad of a clip in comparison to the efficient Dubs, how are you going to win? I don't know, Doug. How you going to win? Shout out to the Sixers. 31 threes a game. I see you, JJ Redick. Finally had one good game last night. 30-plus points. But these numbers are very interesting. If you go down and look at it, what do you expect? Like in the Western Conference, you got the Clippers at the number one seed, 5-2. Now, they've played the least amount of games of anybody in the league. So 5-2, though. They got Houston at 7-3. And Eric Gordon. You got to talk about Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon has been killing it. He's been out here balling. He looks healthy, which I think it's the first time we can say that in about 4 years. Where he's completely healthy. Nothing nagging. Nothing he's rehabbing or therapy or whatever. Straight up healthy Eric Gordon. What's going to happen once a point for all comes back? How's that going to work when a point for all comes back? Because this team looks to be more efficient than last year's team. And we know how good last year's Rocket team was. And this is without Pat Bev. Because he's gone. So how is the point fraud going to fit in? I don't know how that's going to work. Is the point fraud going to come in and try to be like Eric Gordon? I mean, he kept claiming that he wants to play off the ball. He wants to shoot more. You know, I was in L.A. last week and I had time. So I watched that three-part miniseries they did on the point fraud on ESPN. And the whole thing was, I want to shoot. I want to score. And Harden was basically telling him once, you know, he signed and everything, they went to go play at the Pro-Am out there in Cali as well. And he told him, like, oh, I want to see you shoot. I want to see you shoot. So that basically tells me Harden's still going to be handling the ball. So now I'm going to have a point fraud coming off of being a shooter. Hasn't been that way for a very long time. He's saying he's ready for it. He's saying he's been waiting for that opportunity, which I think is a pure lie. But it remains to be seen. But how's he going to fit in as just a shooter? Is the point for that good of a shooter to be regulated to just being a shooter? I don't know about that. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits in, because I'm not sure how that's going to work. It's definitely not enough to beat the Dubs, but I'm just not sure feasibly how that's going to work when you bring back the point fraud in however long, how many weeks, you know. It's been going on for a while now. You're not sure when he's coming back, but when he eventually comes back, is Eric Gordon going to be less aggressive? Because you don't want that, because this is the best Eric Gordon I've seen since he was, you know, with the Pelicans, or I guess they were back to the Hornets then. Or maybe even his Clipper days. No, I'll probably say his Hornet days. This is the best I've ever seen Eric Gordon. He's going to the cup, he's finishing, and he's shooting lights out from three. I don't know what they're going to do about that point fraud. I'm sure they'll have moments where it looks great, but fundamentally and basketball-wise, I'm not sure how that's going to work. Because right now, with Harden being ball dominant and surrounded by shooters, this is the best they've looked. The other big game that ESPN had last night, you know, the Cavs-Wizards was the lead-in, and then the second game they had was OKC and Boston in OKC. Oh, sorry, OK3. That's the nickname, and we're sticking with that, right? That's the OK3. So the OK3 in Boston, OK3 was killing them, shredding them. Kyrie looked awful, and it looked quite easy for the OK3. Then the second half happened. And the second half, they put up 64 points in that second half. Boston did. And they end up winning the game quite easily. 101-94 in the end. But it looked kind of worse than that in that fourth quarter. And I think Kyrie had like 19 in the second half. End up with 25 and 6 dimes. And he was unguardable. And if he's unguardable, he can still lead a team to victory, especially at this advanced age in his career. And, you know, people were, you know, saying now that he doesn't have Bryant, he's going to go back to getting results, like, especially with the injury to Hayward. He's going to go back to how he was pre-Bron in Cleveland. But that was a youngin'. That was a very young Kyrie Irving. This dude is older now, mature now, seasoned now. More of a man now. That's probably why he wanted to get the hell up out of Cleveland, because he has to be under, you know, Bron's thumb. So the Gordon Hayward thing happens. That's obviously devastating, but they lost their first two games, but they won 7 straight. And they've won impressively. Going into OK3 and getting that dub is a big one. Especially how bad they looked in the first half. They looked bad. And Al Horford, I don't know what kind of defense OK3 was trying to do, but their pick and roll defense was atrocious with Al Horford. It became textbook where anytime it was Kyrie or even Marcus Smart or even at some points in the game, Jason Tatum running that pick and roll, Steven Adams or any other big on OK3 was leaving Horford open for threes in big moments. He was 4-for-4 from three. I mean, Steven Adams has been in the league long enough to know that the game has changed, and these bigs out here chucking threes up. Now, you might not believe in Al Horford shooting threes, but after he makes one or two, you can't keep leaving them open. But they left him open for four of them things last night, and he hit all four. Then he was 8-for-10 inside, so he had 20 points. 20 points and 8 boards from Al Horford. Can't have that. Now, I know Al Horford is thought of highly in some people's minds, not in mine. 20-8 is too much for a team to be giving up, especially when four of those things were threes. So that's 12 points already. When you look over at the OK3 side of things, right? Like, again, you remember we came out here? Like, I came out here and I said, if Westbrook's going to be efficient with his shots, the OK3 is going to be a problem, right? Remember I said that. So let's go ahead and look at the game log for Russi. So, again, we have the game, that first game against the Knicks, where he was phenomenal. Only took 12 shots, made 7 of them, only took 1 3. 7 of 10 from the free throw line, 10 rebounds, 16 assists, 7 assists, 7 turnovers, but you'll take that with Russ, right? So they won that game. Then they went to Utah, got that ass beat. 11 shots for Russ. So again, low number. He only hit 2 shots. 5 threes, only made 1. 4 free throws, only made 1. 13 rebounds, 9 assists, 7 turnovers. So again, that's a bad night for Russ. That's a bad night. 2 of 11, 1 for 5, 1 for 4 from the free throw line. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 13 rebounds, 9 assists, 7 turnovers. That's a bad night for Russie. And he took that L. Then he had that wild game against the T-Wolves where Wiggins hits that long-ass bank shot 3 to win the game, right? So 24 shots for Russie. That's the Russ we know, right? That's the MVP triple-double average Russ, right? Hit 12 of them, 50%. You can live with that. 8 threes, made 5 of them. As long as he's making them, you can live with that. Plus, you got Jeff T guarding him. That's Swiss cheese. 4 free throws, only made 2. You like to see better from your point guard. 5 rebounds, 10 assists. Only 2 turnovers, so a mixed bag. Lots of shots, kind of efficient, still not good from the free throw line, didn't crash the boards, got his 10 dimes, an up and down game against the Timberwolves for Russie. Then they played Indiana. 18 shots for Russie, made 10 of them. You live with that. 4 threes, made 2 of them. You live with that. 6 of 10 from the free throw line. You'd like a little bit better from your point guard, but it's okay. 16 assists, 10 rebounds, 7 turnovers. But they got the W, and by a large amount. The return of Oladipo to OKC. It's OK3. I wonder if they did a video tribute. It'll be a bunch of bricks and him standing in the corner waiting for Russ to pass on the ball. But suffice to say, they won the game by 18. Then they played Minnesota again. Took another L to Minnesota. At Minnesota. 18 shots, made 10. 3 threes, made 1. 8 free throws, made 6. 8 rebounds, 9 assists. 8 turnovers. Played the pitiful Bulls. 13 shots, made 5. 2 3-pointers, made none. 13 rebounds, 13 rebounds, 13 assists. 2 turnovers. Bill the Bulls. He didn't need it. They won by 30-something points. Milwaukee against Giannis. 12 shots. Made 5. Similar to that first opening night Knicks game. 12 shots. Made 5. 0 for 2 from 3. Similar to that Knicks game. Low output from 3. Don't need it, especially if you're not shooting it well. 2 for 3 from free throw. 10 rebounds. 9 assists. 4 turnovers. That's the rush you want. Now, he may not want that, but that's the rush you want. They played Giannis. They won by 19. Big win for the OK3. And that was on the road. But then you had last night. Last night at home against Boston. 20 shots. Made 7. 7 threes. Only made 3. 2 for 2 from free throw. Yay, Russie. 6 rebounds. 11 assists. 6 turnovers. You can't have that from Russ. You can't have that in the big spot against Russ. They lost by 7, but it was worse than that if you watched the game. 7 of 20, you can't have that. He made 7 shots against the Knicks. He only shot 12 times. He only made 5 shots against Milwaukee and Giannis. He only shot the ball 12 times. Again, it was the Bulls. Shot the ball 5 times. Shot the ball 13 times. Only made 5. In their wins, he shoots the ball less. When he shoots the ball a lot, when he gets up those 20-plus shots, it's a wrap for OK3. And if they don't get that under control, this experiment is going to be a wash, and Paul George and Melo are going to walk out the door. And again, I applaud Presti for doing it. He got 2 borderline elite players. Well, Paul George, to me, is still elite. Melo's probably not on that elite level no more, but you got 2 top-notch, 2 top 20 players in the league for 4 scrubs. And yes, Oladipo is a scrub. I don't care what he's doing in Indiana. It's just him chucking up shots like in Orlando. Nothing new. I've seen that movie before. I know how that ends. It ends not making the playoffs or in the East. Maybe they'll make the playoffs. They're definitely out in the first round. So Oladipo could go out there and chuck up all the shots he wants. It's the same Oladipo. Four scrubs. Got you Paul George and Carmelo. Oh, I'm sorry. My man Melo, Carmelo, Hoodie Melo the God. So what are the OK3 going to do with Russie? Who's going to be able to get in his head and tell Russ, yo, Russ, you know, when we win, you only average like 14 shots a game, right? And anytime, for the most part, when you shoot over 18 times, when you shoot over 14 times, we getting blowed out or taking L's. So who's going to talk to Russ? Who in that locker room is going to talk to Russ? Yeah, Russ's shots are down. His shots are down to 16. It was at 24 last year in his historic season. 16 field goal attempts a game. His threes are down. He averaged 7.2. It's down to 4. His free throws are down. He averaged 17 last year, down to 12. But them turnovers are the same. Who gonna talk to Russ, man? It ain't gonna be the two dudes that just got there. It ain't gonna be Steven Adams. It ain't even gonna be Billy Donovan. I don't think it's gonna be Sam Presti. So who's gonna talk to Russ? Is Russ gonna make this OK3 thing not be a thing? Is him wanting to be Russie and him proving that contract and proving the MVP status that he is and still wanting to be put in that conversation of top five or top three in the league, is that going to sabotage this OK3 thing? It might. Because when he don't shoot a lot, they win. When he shoots a lot, they lose. It's pretty much that simple. But who's in the locker room is going to tell Russie that? Habitual nut-headed Draymond Green and Mark Cuban seem to be going at it. This all stems from, you know, a football subject. This all stems from, you know, the Houston Texans owner, Bob McNair, you know, in the players' meeting saying, you know, you can't have inmates running the prison in a predominantly black league on protest about racial inequality and police brutality. Not an anthem. Not an anthem. Texas owner Bob McNair said, quote again, "We can't have inmates running the prison." So obviously that started a firestorm. Twitter went nuts. Media went nuts. Pundits went nuts. McNair tried to clarify his statement and things that that matter, saying that we're reading into it something that it's not. You know, sure. Whatever the case may be. But Draymond went to Instagram and basically said this is a Donald Sterling type offense and that maybe we should get rid of the term owner because that's relative to slavery. While there is something to that, and you know, QB King came right back and said he thinks that Draymond needs to apologize. Yeah, because, you know, I'll read the quote from Cuban. Cuban said he owes the NBA an apology. I think he does, because to try to create some connotation that owning equity in a company that you busted your ass for is the equivalent of ownership in terms of people, that's just wrong. That's just wrong in every which way. Now, if you play for a team, there is an owner of a team. You are an employee of that team. The owner owns the team that you are employed by. Are you owned by that owner? Now, teams can trade you. Teams can release you. Teams can fire you, essentially. Teams can sell you. The Bulls basically sold Jordan Bell on draft night. For $3.5 million, the Bulls sold Jordan Bell. Now, you can call it a trade, whatever it is. They got cash in return for a human. Jordan Bell was sold for $3.5 million. Now that sounds bad, right? If I say Jordan Bell was sold, that sounds horrible. If I just say Jordan Bell was traded by the Bulls to the Warriors for cash considerations, that's the mumbo jumbo, the sports jargon that just makes it seem, oh, okay. They traded him for money. All right. But if I say Jordan Bell was sold for $3.5 million to the Warriors, then it sounds bad. And that's all about context. You can make things sound worse than what it really is, or you can disguise things of what they really are, all by switching the verbiage. So while Draymond may have a certain point that yes, the word owner is something, there's also an owner of a company, and you're not, I'm not owned. I have a job. I'm not owned by my company. My company does not own me. Now they can fire me. They can suspend me. They can put me on probation. But they can't sell me. But in sports, you can be sold. In sports, you can be traded with no say. Unless you're lucky enough or have the power enough to have a no trade. So again, in essence, is Draymond accurate? I don't think so. But there's something to it where if you do want to take a deep dive into the verbiage, into the language of what ownership is in athletics, that's why, you know, I'm as much as I'm a fan of watching the draft and stuff like that, part of that is a little inhumane. You are coming into the professional ranks and you are unable to control where you go to start your career. Imagine if that was you. Imagine if you're the top of your field. You can't apply to where you want to go. You get recruited. You get chosen, no matter what the team, no matter what the situation. That's a little unjust. Beggars can't be choosers. Some dudes are lucky to get picked with where they picked. Some dudes don't care. I don't care. I just want... Some dudes want the check, so they'll go wherever to get that bread to chase the bag. I understand that. Some people's living situations and family, you know, family situations, if you will, are different from others. But imagine being the top in your profession, yet you can't choose where you get to play, where you get to use your skills and your assets at being the top of your profession. I mean, look at all the bad draft choices throughout the years in any sport. Look at all the bust. Look at all the bad fits that teams have picked. Look at all the mismanagement that has been done where certain players were bad fits for a team. And it cost them the early years of their career. They might not have ever recovered. Or it might have taken them 2 or 3 additional stops to find the right fit. To go somewhere where your skills are needed and warranted and able to be used for a better purpose. Like, you take a guy. I could think of a couple of players. Like, they flamed out. They didn't have a chance. They did not amount to anything. But you look at a player like Thomas Robinson, right? Thomas Robinson was drafted by the Kings. I think it was a top 5 pick back in 2012. I'm going to say 2012. I think I'll fact check that. But 2012. So, big man, athletic, could run, shoot, crash the boards, all that stuff, right? As a 4. You know who was already playing the 4 for them? Boogie. They had Boogie already. They had Boogie already and they took Thomas Robinson. Boogie was already Boogie. Not Boogie to the way Boogie is now, but Boogie was already Boogie then. Boogie going into his 3rd year, they went out there and drafted another power forward. And I've talked about this other guy before. You know, Marshawn Brooks. Marshawn Brooks went to the Nets when the Nets were very dysfunctional with no clear outlook as to what they were trying to do. And I really think he had the ability to be like a really decent Jamal Crawford type player. And he flamed out. He got thrown into the fire way too early. He wasn't ready, even though he played 4 years in college. He still was not ready for that NBA level to be thrown out there and be named a starter and a top rotational player. Wasn't ready for that. And he got thrown out there. And the Nets being the Nets, they didn't have the system around him to help build him up and coach him up and make him better. And he flamed out the league. He bounced around. I think he went to the Lakers and he bounced around a little bit more. And now he's out the league. I think he's overseas. But coming into the draft, I thought he was a sleeper. I was like, yo, this kid could ball. He just went to the wrong team. He got picked by the wrong team in the wrong fit, in the wrong situation, in the wrong management, in the wrong training staff. All of that stuff around them, all those bad things stunted his growth as a player. But yet every year we get hyped for the draft. Every year we're doing draft previews, and I'm guilty of it too, or all of us are. We feed the monster of this draft where if I'm the best mechanic, I don't want to get drafted by some no-name, no-frills, hood-in-the-wall spot. I want to go to the top mechanical spot in the country. I want to be, you know, with the best. If I feel I'm the best, I'm qualified to be the best, I want to work with the best. Doesn't work that way in sports. If you're the best, you get picked by the worst. And sometimes the worst are not just worst because of their players. Sometimes they're the worst because of their management. And management rarely gets changed over as quickly as cleaning out a new roster. You can get rid of players like that. Management, not so much. So that's why you see the teams that are constantly dysfunctional, that are constantly in the lottery, because the management is trash. Ownership is trash, and you can't get rid of it. So if you're a player, why would you want to go there? But again, I understand. Dude's got families to feed. You want to get mama that house. You want to get pops that whip. I understand. But the notion of a draft, much like the notion of ownership in sports, very shaky, and I think we need to examine that and do a little bit more thinking inward about what these words really mean. Because so while I don't co-sign everything that Draymond said in regards to ownership, there is something to be said about ownership in sports, where you can literally be sold for cash. All right, we got a couple of hot lava takes before I get up out of here. Hot lava take. Kyle Kuzma will win Rookie of the Year. He's starting, or at least he should be starting. Now he got Larry Nance Jr.'s hurt. Luke Walton got to do the right thing. Get Kyle Kuzma in there and watch him flourish. He's already balling off the bench. He needs to get minutes in the clutch down the stretch here. Let him do what he's continuing to show already. Kyle Kuzma, 27th pick in the draft. Rookie of the Year. Hot lava take. Hot lava take. I'm still waiting on one of y'all to hook me up with one of them Nike hoodies. Them Nike hoodies are so fire, bro. I don't even care. It doesn't even have to be a Bulls one. I even saw the Bucks one. The one Giannis had on looked fire. And they got that like puke green color. And that shit was fire. I just need, for the home team, I need somebody to bless the kid out there with one of those NBA Nike hoodies. Not the jerseys. You saw Ben Simmons joint rip up the other night, or last night. So I don't want the jersey, only the hoodie. Hot lava take. Kyrie Irving's in love with Brad Stevens. Hot lava take. You didn't catch that? You didn't catch the little podcast that Kyrie was on, gushing over Brad Stevens, said he's been waiting for analytical mind and stuff like that. Slow down, Kyrie. You're still out here balling, chucking it up like nothing else. The offensive system hasn't changed. He's still playing like Kyrie. He's just out here getting buckets. He was 7 of 20 last night. Calm down, Kyrie. Kyrie in love with Brad Stevens. Hot lava take. Last hot lava take. Dennis Smith Jr. should have been a Nick. He's going to waste away. Now, remember I just talked about dudes would get drafted by the wrong team, bad fit, so on and so forth. Dennis Smith Jr. if he was a Knick, would have the Knicks more in the mix than Frank Ntilikina. And I know Ntilikina has looked okay in spurts, but Dennis Smith Jr. is going to be a beast in this league, and he's going to wallow away for 3 to 4 seasons in Dallas before he gets a chance to be a stud. Because Dallas hasn't shown any type of acumen of training up young players. All they got is stumbling into Dirk, and that's it. Name me another young player that went to Dallas, got way better, and then cashed out. You want to give me Jay Crowder? Jay Crowder, to me, has been the same player. He shoots a little bit better than when he was at Marquette, but more or less, to me, he's the same player. He's more stronger. He's more built, but essentially, game-wise, it's the same. Dennis Smith Jr., DSJ, wasting away 4 years in Dallas. High lava take. And that will do it for me. I am Sam Dusamary Jr. You are listening to the Pick and Pop Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD. That's TheESamD. Use the hashtag Pick and Pop. Pick and Pop. No and. Pick and Pop. SoundCloud.com/ShieldFreeSports is where you're listening on SoundCloud. Subscribe and rate on iTunes. 5 stars, nothing less. Tell a friend. iTunes, subscribe and rate. Google Play, Stitcher Radio, same deal. Subscribe and rate. Shout out to May 1st Music. You're hearing the production on the intro and the outro. Support him at May 1st Music. SoundCloud.com/May1st Music. All right, this here was a do-over because it was too much going on Friday night to let the Friday pod go out. This is the Saturday pod. I'll look at the schedule for next week and see how the games are flowing. If there's popping games Friday, you'll get a pod Saturday. If the slate is just lackluster, you'll get a pod Friday. All right, I'll holler.